The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1004. It's the 27th of February, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, VRS, and Neil discusses their agreement with shoemaker Vivo Barefoot to collaborate on developing a range of footwear that incorporates graphene into existing resins and fibres in order to enhance material performance. Also on the podcast, Patrick Cullen, CEO of Connemara Mining, that's C-O-N, and Patrick talks about their strategic financing and board restructuring. Also, João Andrade, CEO, and Professor Peter Hollands, Chief Scientific Officer of Wide Cells Group, that's WGC, talks about the license award from the Human Tissue Authority. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about the following companies: Powerhouse Energy, PHE, Feedback PLC, that's FDBK, and Cambian Group, CMBN. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion. That's VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me again.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, not a week goes by, it seems, where you don't release some kind of news, and some exciting news today, and we'll get to that in a bit. But for people, say, new to this podcast, Neil, never heard of Vesarion, explain what you're all about, please.
Well, we're an innovative materials developer. We've got spin-outs from the University of Manchester, University of Cambridge, University of Liverpool. We take that technology and then we work with large global OEMs. And you'll have seen over the last couple of months that we've announced a staggering number of collaborations and commercialization projects for things like graphene.
Exactly. And right now you're actually in Israel and I'm not sure if you'd like to say what you're doing, are you?
Well, I'm on a government mission with the Materials Knowledge Transfer Network, and we're actually in an Israeli university at the moment. I've just popped out of a lecture, and we're learning all about doing business in Israel. We're learning about new technologies. We're picking up collaborations and partnerships. We're talking to commercial entities. We're talking to universities. You know, very much our business at the moment is focused around UK technology, and this is an opportunity to work with universities outside of that.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm talking to you on Skype, and your profile picture is a little sports car there, and you talk about being on a government mission, and I imagine you in your suit. It's very James Bond-esque, isn't it?
It's always interesting when you travel to Israel you're accompanied with a letter from the UK government. It makes things much easier to get into the country, trust me. But it is a UK government mission, and the second one I've been in a month. So starting to think that it's part of the profile now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go into the agreement with Vivo Barefoot. Is that how you say it? I'm not aware of them. So take us through what this is all about, please, Neil.
This is a really important collaboration for us. These guys are making innovative projects or products already. No one's ever heard of them. They've got some interesting partners, they're already a sizable entity. And the shareholders are very, very interesting. Anybody who does their research will know that these guys, you know, are really pushing the boundaries in footwear. It's another vertical for us. Footwear doesn't have the same regulations as maybe medicine or aerospace. So it's a nice fit for what's going on at the moment. And it enables us to balance the types of inquiries we've got. In this particular instance, we're coming up with new materials using graphene to aid mechanical properties, which is something that we already have a lot of knowledge of.
Okay, and I've never heard of them. So what do you know about them, or what do we know about them then, Neil?
Well, anybody who does their research, as I just said, will see that they've got a substantial backing from the Clarks family. They are not, they're a great company for us to be working with, a great fit for us. They're not bound by any kind of convention, and they want to get moving quickly. And for us, this is probably one of the fastest collaborations we've worked on, and came about in a matter of weeks. What we're starting to see now is that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more people we work with, the more people that want to work with us. And so we're having to expand the team. We're having to deal with lots of projects running concurrently. We're not a one product, one sector type company. We have multiple products in multiple sectors, which means that we've been able to de-risk the whole proposition significantly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've noticed that a couple of people have mentioned there's no numbers in this, and so often there isn't with these RNSs because it's a collaboration, and I suppose that's the way it goes. But so what do you say to people who say, where are the numbers here?
It's very difficult for us to forecast anything at the moment. The problem with that is we don't honestly know how quickly and how big these collaborations are going to be. In some instances, we don't even know if they're going to work. So what we do know is whatever we say will be wrong. It'll either be too little or too much. It'll be either too early or too late. So for us, it's much easier for us to say, let's not set ourselves up to disappoint. Let's let our shareholders know that the collaborations we're dealing with are very significant. They're with very big companies. They have huge potential. We just don't know what that potential is at the moment. And that's why it's so important to have a variety of different applications. You know, far too many times I see companies build their business on having one customer in one sector, which means that you know, they sign away exclusivities, and we haven't got a single exclusivity in place. So, you know, there is nothing that stops us working with other people within that sector, although, you know, these are our preferred partners. So we very much, you know, look forward to working with these guys and with our other collaboration partners. And as soon as we can forecast, we will do. It's very easy for us to forecast our more conventional businesses, but forecasting something like graphene is extremely difficult and challenges even the best economists in the world.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose you don't know, because like, it's very cutting edge, and who can predict the future? And like I said, you know what? Economists are not often right. It's amazing how often they're wrong. So, in fact, they're probably more often wrong than right. But I see here in this RNS, the design director there is Asher Clark. Is he part of the Clark's empire, is he?
He is, yeah. So this is the significant thing for us is not only the company, but the people that are around the table. Mm. And as I always say, you know, in fact, someone actually put it on Twitter the other day, you know, don't bet on the product, bet on the people. Mm. And, you know, that's very much the case, that what we're doing is we're assembling really, really influential and really powerful people that can really assist other parts of our business. And, you know, you'll see in this, we've been able to name the company. They've been very, very gracious in giving us a quote. And these are really important people. And, you know, even for them to be contemplating working with us is a significant testament to what's going on. And for them to be named and for them to give us a quote, we are really pushing the business along at a great pace.
Yeah. So what do you say to people who you know, say that there's very little figures at the moment, and yet you've got a 100 million market cap company, and they're saying you're overvalued? How do you address that?
Well, generally, it's only people that are trying to knock the share price down so they can buy cheaper. But what anybody that that knows, you know, I'm not the kind of person that generally backs down. And you know, I always believe that CEOs should be transparent and they should be accountable. The thing that separates this business from a lot of other businesses that are on the market is that I'm the biggest shareholder, and therefore, not only do I have a hat which says CEO on it, I have a hat that says shareholder. And people say to me, you know, quite frequently, you know, this business is overvalued, you know, and in a conventional PE ratio type way, yes, it is. But then when I'm traveling around the world and I'm going to China and I'm going to Silicon Valley and I look at the valuations there, they operate with a different valuation model. Yeah. And, you know, for me, I think it's extremely good value compared to other comparators. I think it just depends on what you're trying to value it on. And if you're trying to value it on today's opportunity, then that's probably not the right way to value it for where we are currently. I think what you have to value it on is the significance of the collaborations, the quantity of the collaborations, how quickly this business is developing, and what the future could potentially look like. And, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, if you want a safe investment, you know, buy property or look at a FTSE 250 investment. For me, I've bet the whole house on this, and I'm going to make it work.
Yeah. Well, I've often said in the weekend podcast, and I've mentioned your company, saying it's, you know, people who value company traditionally will only get traditional returns, because if you're looking at revenue and profit, you know, that they look, for example, let's say you get a company come up with results and their revenue and profit are up by 10%. That's pretty much 10-15% how much their share price will rise. If you want a company that's pre-revenue and you don't know the potential, that's where you can earn serious money, you know, in shares. But I mean, you are limited if you're sticking yourself to PEs and earnings per share and all this stuff. And it goes back to almost like years ago, the transport used to be horses. Now, if you try and judge, if someone said to you we're going to have a car soon that could travel like 100 miles an hour, you know, people would say no, because they're basing that on today's transport, you know, metrics or models. And so people can't see into the future sometimes, and so it's very hard to value this. And
we're moving very, very quickly. We've established our office out in the US, we've established an entity in Hong Kong. The world is changing very, very quick for us. I've done two trips to China. I've done trips to Spain. I'm in Israel. I've already got confirmed trips to South Korea and to Hong Kong in the next couple of weeks even. We're working really, really hard. We are coping. We are developing our team. We are, we announced today on a Tuesday what I believe to be a significant collaboration. And that's not the end of the story. You know, we've got a lot more fire still to go. We're hungry. We know what the eventual aim is for us. We want to build a significant company, and everybody is aligned to that, and we're pushing hard. So, you know, me as a shareholder, ignoring the CEO part, you know, which I'm extremely proud of what we've been able to achieve from developing the business, you know, two guys in a garage to something which is now traveling with the Prime Minister and being invited to things like this thing in Israel. As a shareholder, I'm sat there looking at the available market. I'm sat there looking at the number of applications. I'm looking at the speed at which things are changing. I'm looking at our partners, you know, the University of Manchester, University of Cambridge. I've just had a conversation with the guys at the University of Oxford. We've got connections and contacts out in Israel, in America, in China. You know, for me as a shareholder, the biggest shareholder, I'm extremely excited to see what's going to come next.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if anyone needs reminding, Neil, if they're not following you already, and we are off the highs here, so, you know, there may be opportunity for people here. So if someone's listening and not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
So I think the first reason is that we've signed a number of collaborations in the last few months, which have been sizable and notable, and that means that we're starting to see commercial traction. I think the second thing is that, as I said previously, the ability of our partners to assist us, whether that's Innovate UK, central government, the University of Manchester, University of Cambridge, other universities, the National Physics Laboratory, ISO, these are all significant partners which have an interest in helping us. And the third thing is that, you know, be under no illusion, I'm a shareholder. I want this to be as big as it can be. I am the biggest shareholder, and therefore, you know, my whole agenda is aligned to those of the other shareholders.
Marvellous stuff, Neil. Good to chat to you, and no doubt we'll be chatting in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
I really do hope so, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Patrick Cullen, Executive Director and Chief Executive Officer of Connemara Mining. That's CON ticker. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Yes, great to talk to you.
And it must be funny hearing that, because that's your new title, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So I came on just over six months ago with Connemara as Chief Executive Officer, but not on the board. We could call it a sort of working-in period. I had to sort of set some objectives for the company with John and Jim and the board there. And I think we've really achieved a lot of that. So with the new financing, we've made a few changes to the board, and yeah, I'm going to take over the executive responsibilities going forward from a board level. Yeah, so
yeah, that was part of the news, along with other bits of news. Well, we'll get into more detail on that in a bit. Before we do, Patrick, for someone listening right now who's never heard of Connemara Mining, can you summarise what you're all about, please?
Okay, Justin. Connemara Mining is London listed. We're a junior exploration company. We're 100% focused on Ireland, a very favourable jurisdiction, we believe. And our projects are focused on zinc and gold exploration in Ireland. Okay. Two very interesting metals, yeah.
Absolutely. And what would you say at the moment, what is the sort of most advanced projects there, Patrick?
Well, we have, we've got a number of zinc projects. Basically, the most advanced project is our Stone Park project. We're in joint venture with a Canadian-listed company, Group 11. Mm-hmm. The Stone Park project, it's actually, they purchased it from Teck, a Canadian major, last year. Mm-hmm. We own 23.44% of that project. There hasn't been much activity on that project in the last couple of years, although there's been a lot of work from the very early discovery between Connemara and Teck back in 2007. Some 50 kilometers of drilling and some very high-grade, very interesting zones that have been delineated. We're expecting to see work start there again very soon, and we're in a position, we've had meetings with Group 11, we're in a position to fully commit to our 23.4% of that project on the expenditures going forward. So we're very excited about that. Yeah. That's probably the most advanced one. And then we're very active currently on our gold projects. We've got a couple of 100% owned gold projects. Particularly now we're busy at Wicklow Wexford on our Mine River gold project. We've had some very positive early results from drilling in November, December last year. And we'll most likely be back on the ground there in March. That's the plan. Although we are reviewing, of course, all our operations. We've had some changes to the board and with this financing. So, but I expect us to see us there in March, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get to the news. When you've raised a big chunk of money for a company of your size, £900,000 at 4.15 pence. Take us through the detail and what it'll be used for, Patrick.
Yeah, so, okay, the we've raised money, you know, and maybe in smaller tranches in the past. What we're really trying to do here with this raising is we're trying to step out, give us that security going forward. We have got some very clear objectives in terms of our gold and our zinc, which I can go into more detail now and I've outlined already. Yeah, this amount of money really sets us up, means we don't have to go back to the market anytime soon. And some of the money's come with, you know, with groups that are established in this area, groups such as Metal Tiger and Michael, who's come on as director from Metal Tiger, is, you know, they actually invested us back in 2016. Mm-hmm. They still hold some 5 million warrants at 5p. And they're focused on, you know, undervalued, what they see as undervalued, highly prospective opportunities. We believe Connemara is that. We have a relatively low market cap. We're still sub 5 million. So we'll be focusing our 100% activity, on our 100% gold project at Wicklow Wexford. We've also got another project in Donegal. That's interesting because of its proximity to what the Dalradian Resources company is developing at their Carnal project. They're in a planning phase to try and develop a mine there. And at the same time, you know, we're going to maintain that our shareholding in the zinc projects that we've got. Particularly, we're looking at Stone Park getting started quite soon, work there. And zinc, you know, is still very strong. Zinc's really holding its own, a tight supply, although, you know, mine's opening. What's very significant about that Stone Park zinc project is its proximity to Glencore's Palace Green. Palace Green is a 42 million ton ore resource, some 8% combined lead and zinc. You know, they've been drilling there, and we've reported this in the past. So they've been drilling, I think there's a 9 rigs active there at the moment. A lot of work going in there, and we'd like to see something happening, and we're expecting to see something happening on our side with our joint venture partner. Yeah, zinc in Ireland. Ireland is, as many listeners and some may not know, but Ireland's a very important zinc producer. Currently out of the Tara mines, In Navin produces some 25% of Europe's zinc. Boliden, a Swedish vertically integrated zinc company, they're busy there. They're actually expanding. They have a project going deep, which they talk about another 20-year life of mine. And there's been a number of significant mines on the zinc side in Ireland over the past 50, 60 years. In fact, John Teeling, our chairman, he's been involved in many of those projects going back since the the early 70s. Ireland very prospective for zinc, high grade, good metallurgy. You can expect to see zinc mines being developed in Ireland in the future, I'm sure. And we hope we hope Connemara is in the right space there. So.
Yeah, and zinc is, like I said, it's the price is looking good, and that's largely down to what's perceived as going to be a supply deficit, isn't it, the next couple of years?
And that's right. Yeah, that's right. But also, zinc is zinc's a very, critical metal in terms of, as you see development in the Far East, in the Indian subcontinent. Zinc, is primarily 60+% of it is used in galvanizing. So it's used in all steel applications, be it white goods, your refrigerator, your microwave, motor vehicles. So any growth, no matter how much growth's happening, there's a huge quantity of zinc required in the developing world and in developing economies. So what's happened in the past 20 years or 10 years, certainly there's been very little development of new mines. A lot of mines have closed, not because they were just sub-economic, because also they've run out of resources. And so exploration, there hasn't been enough exploration to develop enough new mines over the past decade and going back. So there's this rush now. Obviously, it's encouraged by the price, but the price has been, it's linked to tight supply. It may go a lot higher. Some commentators are saying it can go $4,000 a ton. And that might be just short-lived. The supply will catch up. But certainly, we don't see zinc. I wouldn't expect zinc to go back to the low levels that we saw in, going back a few years. I mean, we're at decade highs now. And hopefully, that'll be maintained. Yeah. It's important when you look for resources or you look to build mines in cases like this, they look for large mines in proven jurisdictions. Yeah. Now, Ireland's a proven jurisdiction for zinc, and also has a lot of other favorable, features. It has a good corporate taxation and fiscal policy, and is ranked very highly amongst commentators in terms of its investment attractiveness.
Yeah. Okay. So, ideally, I mean, what's the next bit of news, next milestone you hope to achieve, then, Patrick, in the next 3-6 months?
I think the milestones we'll be achieving. We want to continue to drill interesting and excellent grades at our Wicklow Wexford Project Mine River on the gold, and we'll be contributing to expenses on expenditure on our Stone Power project with Group 11. And hopefully we'll see some activity in one of our other joint ventures with Teck. We'll be spending the money going forward. We'll announce what our strategies are and our on the ground activities are in the next few weeks. And we're going to continue to try and reach out to the London investors and a wider group through our. Through some of the appointments we've got on the board now, Michael McNeely and David Cockbill, who are, of London based, that's really what we're about now over the next few months.
Excellent stuff. Well, Patrick, I see you've got a lot going on there, but for people listening right now, just to summarise, quickly in 3 bullet points, give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, well, please do follow us, add us to the watch page on CON, ticker. We're focused on zinc and gold, 2 excellent metals to be invested in. We're focused on the Irish jurisdiction, which has just recently been ranked by the Fraser Institute of Canada from 9th last year to 4th most attractive investment destination for mining and exploration. And we're well funded. We've got a strong balance sheet, low market cap, tightly held. We're ready to go.
Excellent stuff. Patrick, like I say, very busy, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ja Andrade, CEO, and Professor Peter Hollands, Chief Scientific Officer of Wide Cells Group. That's WDC ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Good morning, Justin.
Good morning. Now you've had some significant and important news out, and we'll get to that in a bit. As always, though, Jao, for people listening, not aware of the group, explain what is White Cells all about, please.
So White Cells, we are a worldwide provider of stem cell services, and our mission is to make stem cell treatment successful and affordable globally. This means that today we are providing a service where families have the ability to store their baby's umbilical cord blood stem cells to protect their families against future illness. We have our own facility where we are able to provide this service. We have an insurance plan, the first one in the world to cover for the costs associated with stem cell treatment, which means if the families store the stem cells, if they need to use it in the future, we have an insurance policy that costs around £150 per annum that covers up to £1 million worth of medical travel and accommodation bills. And thirdly, we have a division which is White Academy, which provides accurate scientific and medical information to both healthcare professionals and to clients as well, so that they can make an informed decision.
Marvelous. Well, you've announced today you've been licensed, you've been a license award from the Human Tissue Authority, or HTA. So, Pete, let's come to you. What does the Human Tissue Authority license mean to White Cells Group?
Okay, so initially we received our research license last summer, and this enables us to carry out cutting-edge research in White Cells in Manchester. So that was really important. But yesterday we were issued our human application license. Now, this is a key step in our end-to-end stem cell service provision proposal. Now, the Human Tissue Authority Human Application License enables us to collect, process, store, and release for transplant cord blood and cord tissue. So what this means to us is that it means that we can now start to provide our baby cell service within UK and Europe. And it places White Cells Institute of Stem Cell Technology in Manchester as a leading stem cell facility in the UK.
Yeah, and I suppose worth pointing out, I mean, is it easy to get an HTA license, and do lots of companies have one?
Certainly not. It's quite difficult, and rightly so. The reason for that is that the license ensures the safety and quality of the stem cell product produced. And this is really important because this protects future patients in the future. In terms of license numbers, there are about 100 human application licenses in the UK. Most of these are hospitals, and there are very few private companies that hold this license, and we are one of them. But the process, as I say, is quite difficult. It involves various steps. We have to develop a quality management system. So we have to have SOPs, policies, procedures, quality manual. We have to validate all of our equipment, all our facility itself. Our processing and storage must be validated. And also all of our staff, of course, must be trained and competent. And the documents involved must include things like consent and agreement for our clients, which once again must meet HTA requirements. And I should probably add that this is an ongoing thing. So, of course, we have our license now, but this is day one, so we must maintain the system to our own gold standards. And, of course, there will be regular inspections as time goes on to ensure that we meet all of the regulatory standards.
Yeah, so quite a milestone, quite an achievement. OK, so on to you, Jao. How does, say, your service, you know, differ from competitors then?
Well, first of all, we are our facility is inside the University of Manchester Innovation Centre, which enables us to have some interesting relationships and ensure that we continuously develop our proposition and our service to our clients. Secondly, we are the only London Stock Exchange company within this space. There's no other publicly listed company, which again, we are under a higher scrutiny, which provides more confidence to clients that, or should provide more confidence to clients that are deciding to store their stem cells with us. We have the cell plan, the insurance policy that all corporate banks meet that criteria. And this is a very important service to families who are storing their baby's umbilical cord with stem cells, because if they need to access treatment in the future, they will need to have an insurance policy in place to enable them to be able to access that treatment. And also, there's differences in the protocols that we are using in Manchester, and even the quality of our facility, as Peter has just mentioned, and we are using the latest equipment as well. So what we are trying to do is to increase the standards in the industry, and it's safe to say that today we have a state-of-the-art facility in the University of Manchester, and most likely one of the best in Europe and even in the world. So it's a trust business, really, when the family is deciding to store stem cells with us for the next 20 or 30 years. And what Peter has just mentioned is a very important point for clients.
Absolutely, yes. Okay. And could you explain the revenue model for baby cells? And are you in any kind of position to forecast expected revenues over the next 3 years?
Yeah, so the revenue model is, I'm going to use an average number because, first of all, our license allows us to procure stem cell clients in the UK and also in Europe, which means family that are positioned in any of these geographical locations. We can receive samples from Spain or Portugal or Italy and send them over to Manchester to process them. Now, the average cost for a client will be around £2,000. And that's for the initial processing, for the collection kits, transportation of the sample, initial analysis and tests. And then for the annual storage, which is basically to keep the stem cells frozen every year, there will be an ongoing fee of around £50 to £75 per annum, which means that this is mainly a recurring revenue model. However, we'll have alternative payment plans, which will include prepaid storage for a number of years. And we'll be launching this offering now in March. And we'll then make an announcement in due course. Now, in terms of sales forecasts, we are targeting 500 clients in the first year, and this is starts counting now that we received the license, so it's pretty much 2018. Then 2019, we are forecasting 1,500 clients, and then by year three, we should have an accumulated 5,000 clients by the end of that year. So it's a very interesting business proposition, and it yields around 60 to 70% gross margin.
Yeah. And how are you going to market baby cells?
So first of all, we in the UK will have our own teams, our own call center. We'll be visiting obstetricians and hospitals, birth preparation centers to explain first to medical professionals, healthcare professionals overall, the benefits of parents storing their baby's umbilical cord blood so that they can make a recommendation to them. But what we'll also be looking to do is to set up agents throughout Europe. And this might mean agents that are purely setting up their own sales and marketing teams, visiting obstetricians with their medical reps, let's say in countries such as Spain. The agent has medical reps that are visiting doctors, explaining the benefits of storing stem cells, and then the doctor is explaining it to expecting parents. So again, they can make a decision on storing their stem cells. We'll be also discussing this subject with midwives. So it's mainly through healthcare professionals, but there's also direct sales through our call center and our website as well, where we are hoping that in the next couple of months we have an e-commerce platform where clients are able to purchase the product directly in our website as well. But mainly we are looking for the support of medical professionals and looking for agents, which are sort of franchisees for white cells, to be in different countries and procuring clients and then sending the stem cell samples over to us in Manchester.
Yeah. And will this, as a Human Tissue Authority license, provide any benefits to your other two divisions?
Yes, it does, because with cell plan, what we are aiming to do is to provide a solution to more and more families all over the world where they can access the best stem cell treatment and the best care possible in the future. Now, if we have our own laboratory facility and we are able to provide families the service of storing the stem cells with us, and then we have an insurance plan that is able to cover the costs associated with treatment in the future, 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years down the line, it can effectively help cell plan to sell more policies. And at the same time, patients benefiting for being able to access treatment. Now, with Wide Academy is a little bit different, because we recognize there's an information gap in the markets, which we are looking to address with Wide Academy, which is basically informing medical professionals and our target audience, our potential clients, of the benefits of storing stem cells, what they can be used for, where the medical centers, who are the medical teams involved, what is the process, should they need to use the stem cells for treatment in the future, how much it costs, and all the bureaucracy and removing all of that. And Wide Academy is responsible for providing that information, but also providing courseware, modular courseware with continuous professional development accreditation. And these are very important points for us as a whole group, as our end-to-end service, which is with Wide Academy, we inform, we provide training and education in stem cell technology. With Wide Cells, we are able then to store the stem cells for the families that decide to do so. And by taking on the cell plan policy, when they need to use the stem cells for treatment in the future, we have a solution that enables them to access the treatment. And we are the first company in the world to be able to have the whole end-to-end service from the first moment the client is aware about the solution until the day he might need to use it in the future.
Yeah, and can you explain then, Joe, what other advances investors can expect to see over the next 6 months for the wider group?
Well, we have been in discussions with with several corporate banks all over the world in different continents to start offering our cell plan policy to their clients. We've recently closed an agreement in Spain, which is the best market for corporate storage in Europe. The launch of cell plan in Spain is imminent now. It should be happening at any moment. We run the trial in the UK first. The trial went well. We have tested our e-commerce platform, our marketing campaigns, interaction with the corporate bank, and so on. And now we are launching it in the best market in Spain. So we are expecting maiden revenues from Spain in the upcoming weeks. Following that, it will be other agreements with corporate banks, mainly in Asia Pacific and in Latin America, which are emerging markets where we see high growth rates for this type of services. We can also expect to have the first courseware for Wide Academy being launched in the upcoming months, and also starting to see the first revenues from our baby cells products, our stem cell storage service, our umbilical cord blood stem cells, now that we have received the license from the Human Tissue Authority. Basically, this means that the three divisions are now live. They are all licensed in the countries we wanted to launch first. So we have made considerable progress since we floated, and we are in a very, very positive position at the moment.
Excellent stuff. Well, Joe, you pretty much did it there, but I always ask this for someone listening who's not following the story, and and they need to be brought up to speed, and you think you can convince them, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we are a very innovative company. We are revenue generative. Unlike many companies involved in the biotech space, all our products have the ability to generate revenue. There's no geographical barriers with the products and services that we provide. There's already 4 million people in the world that have paid to freeze their baby's umbilical cord blood stem cells and are uninsured. Our cell plan policy is the first one in the world, and we are able to address this problem by providing an affordable solution so families can access treatments in the future. We have a divisional structure that supports each other. We have international reach. There's a proven demand. We are first movers, and we have an all-star team to execute the business plan.
Excellent stuff. Joe, Peter, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
Thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand and Communications. You all right, Al?
Well, Jess, I've actually come off my sickbed today from a flu-ridden, snowbound household in Seaford to speak to you.
The thought of coming on the podcast. I think it made you better, I think, Al.
It was. I thought whatever happens, I've been incapacitated all weekend. Literally, I was able to get out of bed, lie on the sofa, watch England get taken apart by Scotland and the rugby, watch the Wales-Ireland game, which was a terrific game, by the way. And watch the football on Sunday, and I'm now well up to speed on daytime TV, which I've never seen before, and it's a whole different world, isn't it?
Yeah, well, excellent. If anything, it gives you a reason to get out of bed. When you watch a couple of days of that, you think, oh, I don't want to be doing that nonsense.
Let's get it really
them.
Does.
You know, but for fear of sounding like two middle-aged old grumpy old men whinging, I'm not feeling the best either. I spent all night, literally, on and off the toilet, really dodgy belly. And so it's people can listen to this podcast and think, these two middle-aged old fellas just whinging about. So anyway, let's move on to stocks. Let's move off the toilet onto stocks. What are you looking at, Al? What's tickling your fancy there?
I'm just trying to get the picture of you on the out of my mind, but there we go. Anyway, okay, going to start with Powerhouse Energy, which we've spoken about before. Powerhouse Energy, epic code PHE. Mm-hmm. Shares have been as high as 1.3p, as low as 0.3p, currently at 0.54p, with a market cap of 7.6 million. So, Powerhouse Energy, distributed modular gasification. Basically, they have an incredible furnace which converts waste products such as tyres. It separates the steel out from the rubber, crumbs the rubber, burns the rubber. There are zero emissions, and it generates a syngas which generates electricity, creates hydrogen for fuel cells, and it also produces liquid fuels or lubricants and industrial chemicals. As with all these technologies, how do they commercialize it, which is the big challenge? And I think we saw a big move in that direction recently, where Keith Alon, the chairman, announced a deal with Wrightbus, who are manufacturing a fleet of hydrogen powered buses that are sold globally. And this is probably the first form of commercialization we've seen utilizing the Powerhouse technology. But I think the numbers at the moment just show a company that's making a loss year after year, simply because it's the money they raise is being reinvested into the technology. There's a full year loss of 1.3 million last year, interim loss of 700,000 at the half year stage versus an 880,000 loss previously. So I would imagine when the annual report comes out, we're going to be looking at a similar situation. There are also a couple of direct buys recently. What particularly interested me on this is that on the Brand UK website, we have a number of writers who just write about stocks and produce investment ideas. One is a gentleman by the name of Ken Baksh. I've known Ken for some time. And Ken's worked for major city institutions. And since then, he's been a self-employed investment consultant. And he works with a number of investment trusts and charities and also dabbles in the smaller stocks. And Powerhouse Energy is a stock he's been watching, and he sent me an email today just saying that he's been watching this stock and he thinks it's way oversold. Of course, it has the attendant risks of a technology company at this stage of evolution, as they all do. But with the director buys, he believes that at this level, there's a very good chance to get in, and subsequently, if they raise money, it's going to be at or around this level. So it should be a really good opportunity. I think we spoke about this beforehand, just we've had stock, I own stock and I just did sell out higher up, but it's been on my watch list and I've been looking for a re-entry point, and just seeing the development here and seeing the way this technology is moving forward, if they can actually fully commercialize this, it's going to be fantastic. It's again, there's still the attendant risk of any new technology like this, but look at what they do. There are no side effects. you know, I mean, tires, for instance, you know, disposing of tires, it's a dirty business. So if you can take a tire, shred it, put it into a furnace, and, you know, generate electricity, create hydrogen for fuel cells, and get those products out the other end without any waste, that's a fantastic thing. So, just Ken brought it to my attention this morning. Thanks for that, Ken. And I think, you know, it's well worth a refocus on this company right now.
It is one of those companies, and I like tech companies that are on the cutting edge, you know, and like you say, I think we've got a few more hurdles to jump over here with this technology yet, but if they can do, you know, commercially what they say they can do, and Keith's been on the podcast several times, you know, and there may be some hiccups along the way. Like I said, with any cutting edge tech stock, there's going to be hiccups, but if they can do what they say they can do, then, you know, this is a game changer, pretty much. And I do like it. I mean, Keith is very passionate about it. And he's moved from the US over to the UK now. He's located here. Like I say, he's bought some shares in the company. It's one on my watch list, because I realise in today's, you know, environment where we're spending basically too much landfilling waste, and there's a problem with that, plastics and tyres and all that stuff. But this is a company that apparently can put this stuff in the machine and turn it into sort of, you know, syngas, which can, like I said, fuel hydrogen, and it's, you know, it's phenomenal. It's like, you know, it is like alchemy, essentially. Zero emissions, or very, very, very close to zero emissions. And I'm just thinking, yeah, this is a huge future if they can commercialise this, you know?
Yeah, there is. Keith made the point in several interviews that obviously there's very much a focus on lithium batteries and electric vehicles at the moment as well. But with the larger the vehicles get, the larger the battery required to power them. And of course, hydrogen fuel cells make perfect sense when it comes to powering larger vehicles, which is where the Wrightbus deal comes in. There's a great deal of technology. In fact, there's a very good video on the Powerhouse Energy website. If investors want to understand how the technology works, there's a great video on there. It's also on excuse me. It's also on YouTube too. So it just really explains the whole process from beginning to end. And it's really simple. You know, that's the great thing about it, the best technology. It's really, really simple. So I think it's well worth re-examining this company. Clearly, the attendant risk is still there, but the more deals they do, the further down the road they go, then there's further validation of the technology, and the company can start to realize and unlock the value that's clearly there.
Yeah, it's, let's be honest, it's been years evolving this technology, and as with all cutting-edge technology, you take a wrong turning, end up in a cul-de-sac, have to turn around and come back and start again, almost not start again, and I think that's what's led some, you know, investors to be disappointed and walked away. But I mean, like myself there, you know, it's firmly on my watch list, and when I see some kind of, you know, there's concrete evidence of commercialization there, I'm probably back into it, because I think it has huge potential if it does what it says it can do. Okay, anything else, Al?
Yeah, just want to revisit Feedback PLC, FDBK. Feedback yesterday announced their interim results. And I think for a lot of investors, you know, this is one of the stocks where, for many, it's been better to travel than to arrive, because the huge potential for Feedback really lies within the TexRad medical imaging system. And TexRad medical imaging, quite simply, analyzes the software analyzes medical imaging, and it can help identify medical conditions that would be previously invisible to the naked eye or could not be viewed directly. In conjunction with that, with TexRad, Feedback also own CADRAM, which is Cambridge. The Cambridge Computed Imaging Limited, and CADRAN have a JV with Future Processing in Poland, and the company operates a picture archiving communication system and provides decision for support for scans, diagnostic workstations. So scans can be viewed on demand from anywhere in the world, and then of course on those images you can utilize the TexRad software. Massive milestone for TexRad last year. It acquired its first CE mark on the TexRad lung product, and the company also has signed exclusive distributor agreements in China and Korea. Throughout last year, the chief Chief Science Officer Balaji Ganeshan was presenting at various seminars and events around the world, demonstrating Texrad, demonstrating the potential in the technology, and selling commercially on the back of that. So, during the six month period, there were revenues of 228,000 generated versus 200,000 last time around. So, a slight increase on that front. The company have also appointed a guy called David Crabb recently as the new chief executive officer to help drive growth. And I think his background is very suitable for helping Texrad to grow and helping develop subsequent versions or CE mark versions of the product. We know, of course, with Flying Brands that a version of Texrad for kidney stones is being utilized by the company. But the applications for Texrad have always been massive. The multitudes and diversity of applications have always been massive. So there's huge potential, I think, to take this on. And if David starts to tick off further deals in terms of CE marks and developments over the course of the next 6 to 8 months, I think we're going to see a huge sea change in feedback, given that the market cap has currently come back to just £4 million. Yeah. You know, we were up to, I think, what, 12 million at one stage, and really we're still scraping the surface. And when you've done deals or exclusive agreements in China and Korea, and you've done deals with Siemens and GE and all these other people that they're working with, you know, it's almost like a who's who of the at the cutting edge of medical technology, and Texrad is fully engaged with those companies. So it's an exciting year for feedback. I think excuse me, as with Power Synergy, there have been delays in bringing the technology to market and developing it, but I think they're getting a team in place now that will be able to execute on this growth, and it's going to be a very exciting year ahead for the company.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, I do own shares in Feedback. I like the tech a lot, and I've written a blog on them. I'm disappointed in the financial results, the revenue. It's not huge. They made a loss, like I said, 350,000 or whatever it is, or 348,000. But obviously, this is historic data. I mean, this is from 6 months, ended the 30th of November. Now, David Crabb, the guy I quite like, he's come on and he's got, like I said, a track record in small tech. He's took a loss-making company and he was to a company that was making lots of money, and he was like voted twice in a trot, one of the best 100 companies to work for. And he's also written a book about turning companies around. So he's got to walk the walk here. And he does say in his first sort of release in this interim result, he says, "I will be refining the commercial strategy and growth ambitions to ensure that Feedback is well positioned to deliver." And he goes on to say, he's going to basically, in my mind, I see him ramping up the commercial side here and really improving that revenue, because they've, like I said, they're doing a lot. They are involved with the who's who, and yet the thing is, they've got so many peer papers or academic papers written on this company, and there is competition in the market, but apparently Feedback have more academic papers written about their Texrad than any other company, and it's highly it's highly considered, in the market, and a lot of people like it, so it goes from being researched in the research used in research based studies to then it has to be used in a commercial sort of clinical stage. And I'm just thinking, how long does it take to transfer from research to commercial, and when we start seeing the revenue come through? Because in my mind, like I said, this was up until November, but in my mind, it's been very slow and sluggish, the revenue generation here. And hopefully David Crabb, the CEO, will sort this out and commercialise this faster and say, come on, let's get it down to it. Let's do some deals here properly, because it's been dragging on for a long time. And I understand, to a certain extent, you've got to do a lot of research. You've got to get a lot of data passed, because it's a very important area of in the medical field. And you can't just say, yeah, it's fine, let's crack on. Let's buy it. People have to test and retest and retest and go over historical data and real-time data and make sure it's all working okay. But it's taken a long time. But I mean, like I said, at the 4 million market cap, when they do show signs that some of the big guys take this seriously, maybe it'll re-rate, because it's a tiny market cap. But hopefully that's the CEO's ground there. That's what he's going to cover and sort out,
Yes, indeed. Well, I think as well, just go back to the earlier point, that these are historic numbers too. These don't, of course, include any of the the revenues from the CE mark product, you know, which going forward we can expect to be a much larger revenue generator, because the CE mark really was only came through at the end of last year, and of course these numbers I think are up to October, aren't they? Is it November?
November 30th, yeah.
November, yeah. So we've not really seen any of those revenues yet. So I think you know we can have sort of there should be every probability that the next up numbers will include a much bigger chunk of revenue from that. And I think if, as you say, if David can clearly demonstrate that jump in growth in revenue, because it doesn't matter how many academic papers you have written, if you're not generating the revenue off the back of it, then it's all it's still jam tomorrow. And the longer it goes on, then I think the more cynical investors become. So feedback, to my mind, still has a great window of opportunity. But David Crabb, I think, has got to get in there. And I think, you know, we've got to see really evidence of that probably in the next 3 to 4 months, for it to be in line with the growth curve, I think we can expect. But 4 million market cap, you know, that's absolutely nothing. And I think, you know, I'm hoping that we'll see a multi-bagger here in the not too distant future.
Yeah, it is nuts. I mean, I said that, you know, this software is currently installed in over 40 of the world's leading research institutions across Europe, North America, Asia, and Australia. And yet, you know, they're using this. They're using it and liking it and writing papers about it. And yet, we've got a 4 million market cap. And what I like about this software, you know, it doesn't cost a lot to replicate. It's software, you know? So it costs nothing to replicate. You can spin this out to as many institutions in the world at very low cost. Okay, anything else, Al?
Yeah, last week my colleague David Paul at VectorVest wrote an article on Cambien Group. CMBN is the epicode. Now, Cambien they're one of the UK's leading children's specialist education behavioural health service groups. They look after 2,000 special needs children and employ 4,500 people over about 220 facilities across the UK. So the company published a trading update at the end of January, said underlying trading was in line with their board expectations, but net cash at the year end was some 82 million ahead of expectations. So the group subsequently declared a special dividend of 8.2p, returning 15 million capital to shareholders. That's on top of the existing dividend that the company pays. So the trigger for this company was the growth in the growth in earnings, and the cash position had been picked out by excuse me.
You're a survivor.
Just about, yeah. I'm dosed up with Beecham, so I'm hanging in there. It was identified by VectorVest back in November last year, and that they revalued the stock at that point. It's got a forward earnings growth rate of 27%, which is excellent on the VectorVest system, and a relative timing. So the VectorVest considers that the timing for buying the stock now is excellent, given the momentum in the growth. It's on a scale of between 0 and 2 of 1.43, so again very high indeed. Currently the stock's trading at 197p. VectorVest has got a valuation of 239p, so there is some upside there. Interestingly enough, shortly after, it was just before the VectorVest note last week, broker Liberum also published a note on the company, raising their target price to the same level. So it was just interesting that view was also sort of verified by another broker too. So I guess to summarise with Cambien Group, you've got an investment into children's specialist education and behavioural health, by any standard, is a sound investment to make. But given the way the board are managing the company, the company are looking after their cash well, and they're managing the business well, and clearly where they are now, there's still further upside to come, as warranted by Vectivis and also Liberium, the broker, plus the company are paying a dividend too. So again, we've had a year high so far for Cambion of 237p, a year low of 136p, just under £2 at the moment. So one to watch.
Yeah, cool. Do your own research at CMBN. Is the ticker.
CMBN, yeah, that's it.
Cheers for that, Al, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Hope we're better then, Joss.
Yeah, hopefully, if we're here at all. Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Chariot Oil and Gas, that's C-H-A-R. At four, Newog, or New Oil and Gas, N-U-O-G. At three, Petromatad. That's M-A-T-D. At two, Armadale Capital, A-C-P. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets after that release yesterday was Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals. That's H-E-M-O. Okay, it's time for the top five most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours on Vox. At five, Upland Resources, satisfaction of condition of farming to P2235. At four, SDX Energy, spud of SAR 2 well, Morocco. At three, Strategic Minerals, Lee Creek Copper Mine Conditions Precedent met. At two, Frontier Resources, T45 well logging update. And number one, most liked RNS, Neil's on the podcast today, Fasarian agreement with Vivo Barefoot. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.